This is the Lottery Podcast. Welcome back. I'm John Wasserman, lead NBA draft analyst for Bleacher Report. This episode is brought to you by Bet Online. We're going to take a little break from draft talk to avoid some repetition. Although recent updates, the lottery was moved up to August 20th, thank God. And the NBA Combine invites were sent out to 100 prospects, even though there probably won't actually be an NBA Combine. Just good for medicals and measurements. I mean, it's still just good to know who the NBA views as its top 100 prospects. But anyway, the NBA is back. I figure we should discuss what's going on in the bubble. So joining me this week is Mo Dakil, founder of JumpBall.net, former NBA video coordinator, current writer for Bleacher Report, podcaster for The Athletic. What's going on, Mo? How are we living?
I'm doing all right, man. As good as anybody can be in this situation.
Yeah. No, it's cool that there's actually like sports coming back. And actually, like 5 minutes before we just started recording, I just saw the NBA released that there were no positive tests again for the second time in a row in the bubble.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing it. You know, they've put in a plan in place. Now, this is one of those things too. It's like you can't rest on your laurels or anything like that, or feel ultimately safe. But you know, they're making progress. They're doing everything they said they would do, and it's so far working, man. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, there's some trust factor I have with Adam Silver, and not like I didn't have it with David Stern, but I mean, something about Adam Silver, I just like feel good when he's on top of things and calling the shots, and he's like a good mix of like being a little out of the box, but not too far, and seems to have a good grasp on this situation.
Yeah, you know, just imagine the amount of credibility he's going to get if he's able to pull this whole thing off, right? And we get to the finals.
Like, especially if all these other sports, you know, go in the toilet.
And it work. Right. You know, so I mean, he's either going to look amazing or have a little bit of egg on his face. But, you know, with how bad the other sports are doing, it's never going to be that bad for him, even if this, I think, doesn't work out.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, I think he's in line for some brownie points after this. Before we actually go into the bubble, the biggest news, I think, outside of the bubble, and I'm in New York, so I'm curious to what your thoughts are on the Knicks' Tom Thibodeau hiring, because, you know, where I am, it really seems split down the middle in terms of people's opinions. I mean, you hear one side that's like, he's a recycled coach, he's kind of outdated, and then the other side's like, okay, there's this credible guy with a winning track record, and the Knicks kind of need that. So where do you stand on what the Knicks did with Thibodeau?
I'm kind of right down the middle. I know it's not the most exciting answer. Look, I mean, Tibbs is a great coach. There's no arguing that. I mean, he helped to bring Minnesota up to the playoffs after them not making it for so many years. He big part of what they did in Chicago, obviously. He's you can almost credit him for the defense the Boston Celtics had when they won the championship, right? Like, I mean, it's not to say that he can't coach at all. My big concern is what are they going to do with the rest of this team? Because Thibodeau's not the type of guy that wants to rebuild. You know, he's at the point in his career where he feels like, you know, it's time to win now. And the roster the Knicks have right now is a rebuilding roster with, you know, some nice young guys, but it's not even like they have the one guy where you're like, this is a franchise piece. We just have to build around this guy and we'll be fine. So I'm very curious to see which way the Knicks go with this. You know, they gave him a 5-year deal, and we know in New York that doesn't mean much with Dolan and company. So I'm going to be interested to see what their next moves are. Are they going to start trying to get rid of these young guys to make moves and get veterans, or are they going to kind of play it safe and start work on development and things like that? And the development route, and you know it better than me, Jonathan, being in New York, that's never really been the Knicks' way of doing things. I mean, they're kind of like the Lakers in that sense. You know, development was never such a strong suit of theirs. So I'll be really interested to see what the next moves are, and that's going to kind of decide it. But Tibbs is a good coach, and anybody that thinks he can't coach in this league, you know, they don't understand coaching and don't understand basketball for that matter.
Right. Like when I saw the news that they hired Thibodeau, my kind of reaction was like, that's great. You know, who cares? They got to get players in the team. You know, you can hire Popovich and the team's still probably going to suck because they need talent. They need to, you know, I'm more interested in what Leon Rose and Scott Perry do to build the roster. And then I'll care more about who's actually coaching these guys. But anyway, I'm kind of split down the middle too. I mean, I wasn't like, okay, that's a bad hire. I wasn't like, you know, this is, guy's going to come and turn things around for the Knicks. But they just got to find, they got to find good players and find a way to convert maybe some of the young talent into good players or really develop them. You know, what's your thought on RJ Barrett in terms of where do you think he can go?
You know, I'm not sure yet. You know, it's one of those things with RJ. It's, you know, first year, it's tough to just make the full evaluation after a guy's rookie year. I felt like at Duke he wasn't utilized as well as he could be. And you're the expert on that. I don't even watch a lot of college basketball. I was only watching because they had that kid Zion. So he's pretty good. But you felt like, you know, there were flashes there. I think you just got to develop him. I don't think he's a cornerstone piece, though. I don't think he's a guy that I'm saying, hey, I got to build around, or he's or I'm definitely not trading him. You know, he's definitely somebody, if the right package comes along, I'll move him. I don't know if he's going to be, you know, anything more than a second or third option, though, in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be a best-case scenario if he was a second option. And he was a guy who, just going back to having, you know, watched him in high school, after one season at Duke, I was much lower on him than I was when I watched him in high school. And then you watch him for a season with the Knicks. Listen, if he is not a cornerstone player, you know, that's bad news for New York. Because now I guess you're relying on Mitchell Robinson and to be a guy that you can count on for the next 5 years to you know, kind of elevate the roster a little bit. I'm curious to see, you know, what are your thoughts on Mitchell Robinson? The last Knicks question, then we'll move on to the bubble. Like, in terms of, you know, how high his ceiling could go in a league where, you know, teams kind of want their big guys to step outside a little bit.
You know, that's one of the guys I was kind of excited for when Tibbs was hired, because I said, wow, like, this is an athletic big guy. You know, I thought he improved this year in terms of shot blocking, in terms of his timing and rotating over and things like that. And I think that's somebody that Tibbs can kind of start to mold. He's still young enough, so it's not like he has so many habits that Tibbs got to try to break things, you know, and start to build him back up. But he can kind of start to mold him a bit, and I think I'm excited for him defensively with Tibbs in that area of, this is something that we can see a lot of improvement in that area. I think he's a piece worth keeping an eye on for him. I liked him coming into the draft, you know, thinking like, hey, he's kind of a Capella sort of look, you know, a kind of guy, but I think he might even be better than Capella. I think he has a little bit more range. We just haven't seen it, and I don't know if we're going to see it with Tibbs, but I think he has a chance to really kind of take a leap just under this coaching staff.
Yeah, I think the frustrating thing, honestly, since the past couple of years is that Robinson hasn't really been fully utilized. I mean, he comes in, and I think he took like one shot outside the paint last year, and sometimes, you know, his minutes are limited. Obviously for foul trouble, but I think Tibbs has this reputation of, you know, playing guys long minutes, letting them play through mistakes. And so hopefully he gives Robinson a chance to make more mistakes this year and hopefully take a next step with his development. But all right, let's go.
Well, I mean, real quick though, too, Jonathan, to just kind of, I feel like people outside of the Knicks organization are higher on Mitchell Robinson than the Knicks themselves sometimes.
Yeah, that seems,
you know,
wrong.
That's kind of the one thing I feel about it. And that's kind of one of those things where I'm like, I hope they start to get pumped up here a bit.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point, and just something I kind of thought about. If the Knicks fall a little bit in this draft, like, they're projected to pick six, but if they end up picking, you know, six, seven, eight, whatever, is Robinson a guy that they can kind of use to move up? Because there's going to be a lot of talk about landing LaMelo Ball. Like, LaMelo Ball is probably – he's been number one on my board since November, and I think you got to feel good about his star potential as much as anyone in this draft. And not only do the Knicks need a star, but they need a point guard, and he wants to play in New York. And there's going to be a lot of pressure for the Knicks to try and get LaMelo. And you just wonder if maybe they'd be willing to move somebody like Mitchell to move up and get that guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's all got to be on the table. I think it comes down to the most important thing for the Knicks is, you know, they got to find that cornerstone piece. What are we building around? And it can't be an aging veteran. You know, it can't be a move they're going to make to bring in an aging veteran. It's got to be, we need a cornerstone guy. This is our guy. This is our face of the franchise. This is the guy we want to retire as a Knick. You know, we need to start building around. And that's kind of where they got to go. And like we said at the beginning, they just don't have that yet.
Yeah, I mean, they did when they drafted Porzingis, but that changed like so fast.
How long ago did that feel?
I mean, Jesus! Looking back to that, I mean, man, what a head scratcher. But yeah, let's get back into the bubble. I you know, I shift towards the Knicks sometimes just because I'm around here, and good to hear other people's opinions outside in New York. But, you know, talk about, like, so these scrimmages that are going on, I mean, how legit are the results? Is it like summer league where it's like, you know, you don't put too much stock into the results, or are these results something we can buy as something to look forward to moving forward?
I think there's elements of it. I mean, some of it was summer league games just in terms of the way coaches were playing their guys and rotations and things like that. And it would be funny because sometimes you'd have, yesterday, for example, the Boston Celtics didn't play any of their guys, any of their top line guys, but the Houston Rockets did, you know, and that obviously led to a blowout. But there's, you know, so it kind of skews things a little bit. But I think the most important stuff to kind of take away, at least that I was looking at, was first, you know, how are the guys adjusting to playing in this gym? Like, this is a new environment for all of these guys. You have video screen backgrounds. You have all this kind of weird stuff going on. No fans in the stands. You have, you know, J.J. Redick had said it's like deathly silent when they're shooting free throws. And you can kind of see it on the broadcast when you're watching it. So I think it's a scenario where I just wanted to watch how guys were adjusting to this, where they were at conditioning. And then I wanted to see what are coaches doing that's different. And I think we've seen some really interesting things coming around, and it's pretty promising. Now, in terms of the results, like, if your team goes 0-3, it doesn't matter in the scrimmages. It's preseason in that sense. But I think there's interesting things and tidbits we can take away from it. And you kind of get a look at, like, man, this guy's in shape, he's in rhythm, he's ready to go. And then there's some guys you're looking at going, like, they're not quite there yet.
Mm-hmm. So what's the one thing that's kind of caught your attention so far that you're like, oh, you know, this guy's playing well, or this team is doing things a little differently?
Well, the one thing that has my attention, and this is probably even just more on a personal excitement level, is Yusuf Nurkic is back, and I love him. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think he gives Portland a whole other dimension that they could play. And, you know, every time last season before he got hurt, John, he was the second best player for the Blazers. You know, he was phenomenal for them. And I think that gives them a big boost, and they look locked in. But, you know, when we talk about teams doing things differently, you got to talk to the Philadelphia 76ers, right? They're moving Ben Simmons to the four. They're playing him off ball a little bit more, putting it more in their guards' hands like Shake Milton and things like that, using him as a roller and things like that. And it's looked pretty good so far for them. And, again, you got to take that with a grain of salt for the games. But the offense has had a nice flow to the system. It's never going to look great, but it's looked a lot better than what it did during the regular season. And I think, you know, with their defense and their ability to kind of play more aggressive defensively, I think they could be a team to really sort of like watch out for.
I mean, for me, it's funny to think, because I've watched, you know, I've gone back and forth on Shake Milton at SMU before he got to the NBA. And I was like, is this guy good? Or, you know, is he plays a little hunched over? Does he have the burst to create for himself? And now he's moved Simmons off the ball. I mean, for a team that's like, you know, trying to get to that championship level. I mean, when I heard that news, I was kind of shocked, but at the same time, I haven't watched a lot of Shake Milton over the past year. Is he really like a guy that the Sixers are going to count on to handle the ball and make decisions?
I don't think I would say it's going to solely be on him. The ball's still going to be in Simmons' hands. You know, they run some pick and rolls with Shake, and he provides a nice little scoring pop for them. Mm-hmm. You know, and a little bit of a threat when he comes off the screens, you know, to shoot it. Whereas before, when it was just Simmons, everybody would hang back. You know, the one thing I think that got lost in all this is, like, you could hang back on Simmons. He's still going to find the pass, you know, and find the angle that he needs to make the pass he needs to make. So, you know, I don't know. It's like sharing responsibilities, I think, more than just kind of putting it all on Shea. Because I think you're going to see Josh Richardson with the ball more. I think you're going to see Tobias Harris with it a little bit more. And I'm not necessarily that excited about it just because I'm not sure how good those guys are in the pick and roll. But it's going to be interesting to see how teams react. And then, you know, if they can hit Simmons on the short roll, that just opens everything up, because then it's, you know, a high-low pass to Joel Embiid or hitting the guys in the corners to shoot the ball. And I think that's kind of what it's – the idea isn't so much like Shake is so good, but it's just – there's just an inherent value for us, and I say us, I mean the Sixers, for them to open up the floor a bit, and it kind of just opens the offense and gives them a better flow than if it's just Simmons and it allows teams to clog the lane.
Yeah, now I'm curious if the Sixers end up trying to take a guard in this draft, because there's going to be a bunch of them available to them in the early 20s. But looking down again this roster, you know, one name that jumps out to me is Matisse Thybulle, who, you know, 4 years at Washington, defensive player of the year, goes number, I think it was 20 overall, and he kind of earned a nice reputation before the NBA shut down as that defensive specialist. But the big question, right, does he offer enough offensively? Is he going to be a good enough shooter? Can he put the ball down? What have you seen from Thybulle, and how big of a role do you think he can have for the Sixers team?
I mean, first off, you have to put some respect on his name, Jonathan. Superstar YouTube vlogger.
Yeah.
Matisse Thybulle. he's taken YouTube by storm with his bubble documentary. Look, I love him. I think, you know, I think he still has ways to go offensively, but, you know, he has just such a great knack for timing and getting, you know, deflections and strips and just getting his hand on the ball. And you know, it's got to be funny for Brett Brown, who's coached Manu Ginobili for all those years in San Antonio as an assistant, you know, and watching Manu gamble, you know, only to be able to recover. You kind of see that with Thybulle. And it's just, you know, I think early on in the season, I remember reading a quote where Brett Brown just said, like, man, I just told him, like, that's fine. Like, I go gamble, because I trust that you're going to get back in the play. And he does that quite a bit. And just add that layer defensively with him. And then you have Ben Simmons, you know, also, you know, long as hell and able to kind of just get in the passing lanes. Like, defensively, that's just a brutal combination there. And I think that's something that makes it interesting. Now, obviously, his offensive game has to improve. They're, with some of the stuff they're running with the elbow action, you know, what they like to do is when they have somebody on the strong side that they're running a pick and roll, when the pick and roll is happening, they like to lift that guy from the corner up to the above the break three, because that puts pressure on the defense. And that's the shot Thybulle has to take, and he has to make consistently enough for defenses to really worry about him. And that's something he doesn't have now. And obviously there's not enough time in the bubble to just kind of develop it, but that's something he needs to develop going forward.
Yeah. I mean, he just seemed like if he went to the right team out of the draft, I mean, it was going to be a perfect match, and he was going to be a value pick who was going to slip because of his age and offensive limitations, but the right fit for him, and he was going to be a steal. And it looks like he is going to be a good fit for Philly now, right away and long term. Another defensive stud, and probably my favorite storyline so far of the bubble. It's only been one game, but Jonathan Isaac comes back. And listen, I'll highlight one of my better evaluations, and at the same time, it has to hit on one of my worst ones, where I had Jonathan Isaac top three coming out of the draft out of Florida State. Unfortunately, I had him one spot ahead of Jason Tatum, who I just did not think was going to be this good. But let's focus on the positives here.
Yeah, let's stay in a good mood. Let's stay in a good mood.
and focus on Isaac, who is, I mean, it seems like, you know, he's translating defensively. Like, everything you hope for is happening and more. He's probably the most exciting, you know, prospect on this Orlando team, which has a bunch of them. And it took a couple years because Isaac's offensive game is a little bit slow to come around, and maybe it still is. But how good of a defensive player can Isaac be in this league?
I mean, he can win Defensive Player of the Year somewhere in the next few years as a wing player. You know, he's long, and that's something that every team values. But it's the instincts he has with it, and he's able to kind of come through and block shots from the weak side. He's got a good motor with him, everything across the board, like – it's just really awesome to watch. Like, you know, I watched the same game you did, this, you know, the one game he played, and it's hard not to get excited. He had about a 7-minute stretch where he just was the best player on the court, and it wouldn't have mattered who was on. He was dominant. He was on both ends of the court. He had a rebound put back for an and one. He had a three in the corner. He had a defensive steal that led to a transition bucket and things like that. Like, he was just making things happen. And I really think that defensively, he's only going to get better. And I think he's paired with a great defensive coach in Steve Clifford. I think that's a guy that can continue to sort of help guide him along and show him a few other things that he can do to help the team defensively. And I think they're just going to he's going to grow to the point where I think eventually we're going to be looking at him as a regular on the All-NBA defensive team and somewhere in the top three of defensive player of the year voting.
Wow. You know, it's funny because coming out of high school, the main draw to him was he's 6'10 and he has these guard skills. I mean, obviously there is the defensive potential, but I think coming out of high school, I was more drawn to his mismatch ability as a guy who's 6'10 with three-point range and create his own shot a little bit. And then as he moved to Florida State, he kind of played within the offense a little bit, and we found that he had more defensive potential than we initially thought. And now he's in the NBA, and you're talking about him as a potential defensive player of the year candidate. And meanwhile, his offense is what needs to come around. You know, what's the next step for him in terms of being, you know, a more productive scorer, a more effective offensive player within Orlando's system?
You know, I think it's the whole package, you know, just has to sharpen up and be better. You know, he's got to be a better three-point shooter. He's got to be better off the dribble and being able to create. You know, he's still pretty slight, so I don't see him kind of doing anything in the post or anything like that. But I think there are opportunities for him to just find the pockets, and he's doing it all. And then I think the next level, which will be tough to get, is creating for others, you know, and it's not like he's got to average 10 assists a game or anything like that. But if he can get to the point where he can, you know, as teams are going to start to put more pressure on him as his offensive game grows, find that open man for, you know, the corner three or the cutter or whatnot, I think that just the continual evolution of his game is where it would continue to grow. And I think those are the whole things. It's all on the offensive end in terms of that. He's got to sharpen the tools he has now, because they're not quite there yet. But he's got to start to prepare for the other things as well.
Where are you at on Markel Fultz?
Man, he's so hard to figure out, dude. He's the guy everybody's rooting for, right? Like it's just been a kind of crazy story. He's shown flashes that are great, you know. Before the suspension, you know, the Orlando Magic beat the Lakers in Staples Center, and I was at that game, and he was a big part of it. He does a good job of just using his body and getting into the paint and creating and passing and things like that, and it's just finding cutters and things like that. Like, I think it's there, but there's always going to be question marks with him, right? Because we're never sure what's happening with his shot. We don't know how much he trusts it, which makes it a bigger issue. So, you know, I'm fence is still out, man. I mean, sorry, God, what a terrible way to screw up two analogies. I'm still on the fence on Fultz there.
Before we continue, I got to give a quick shout out to Bet Online. There's no shortage of action going on at our exclusive partners, betonline.ag. Sports are slowly making their way back, and BetOnline is leading the way with the best odds and lines for all UFC, NASCAR, boxing, and soccer matches. And if you need even more, they have simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC simulations all day, every day, live on their website. Looking for something else other than sports? BetOnline has hundreds of casino games, poker tournaments, and prop bets to check out. Visit betonline.ag and use the promo code BLUEWIRE for a free welcome bonus. That's one word, BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. Yeah, I mean, Fultz, of course, I had him number one, and as did seemingly everybody else. And, you know, the weirdest thing with his shooting, but even if his jumper never comes around, he plays at such a nice pace and got a little bounce to his step, and he's a flashy passer and, you know, picks his spots right as a driver. And, if he could just get this jump shot back to where it was or close to back to where it was, I do think he's got the chance to be a valuable starter. Now, I'm looking down this Magic roster. I'm trying to think, like, what do they need to do to take another step? They've kind of been stuck in this. I know that they're outside of the lottery right now, but they're not really like a scary team, a team that you would fear. You know, what's the next step for this team? You know, what's going on with Mo Bamba, and is how good is Aaron Gordon? What does this team have to do?
Yeah, I think they need to start figuring out who their guys are, right? Because they have a lot of pieces that individually we all kind of like, right? You know, Mo Bamba's an interesting character. You know, we just talked about Isaac. Fultz is a guy that they're hoping can take him to the next level. But what are they going to do with Evan Fournier? Where's Aaron Gordon fit into their plans? You know, is it time to kind of trade some of these guys? Nikolai Vujovic, I always want to call Saša Vujačić, and it always takes me a minute to remember that they're not the same guys, and they're completely different players. But what are their plans with these guys? You know, and are they looking at those guys as the cornerstone, or is it, hey, we're starting to kind of drift away? And if that's the case, then you need to start moving these guys and get something for them while you can. And I think it'll be an interesting scenario. They just got to figure out who they are. And you know, you got to look at the guys like John Hamm, who's running the show there. John Hammond, sorry, not John Hamm, the actor. This is what happens at 9 in the morning.
That John Hamm is talented, by the way.
But, you know, John Hamm, who in Milwaukee was a big believer in long and lanky. And that's how you end up with guys like Jonathan Isaacs on your team. That's how you end up with guys like Mo Bamba, who kind of fit that mold. So you're starting to see where they're going, but they need to kind of start figuring out who are their guys and what are they going to do, and start formulating a plan with the other guys. Because I always feel like they're just rolling on the treadmill of mediocrity. You know, they got a really good coach in Clifford. I'm really high on him. I think, you know, I like Aaron Gordon. I don't think he's reached his full potential yet. I'm not sure if he's going to. That's a whole other story. But, you know, if they're not looking at him as the guy for them in the future, then you need to start moving, start making moves, and start adding pieces so you can start building, so you can get off this damn treadmill and start joining with the big boys.
Yeah, I think it's time to start. I was actually told that they were looking to move Mo Bamba like in the middle of his rookie year, and they never did. And it seems like Gordon's time is up. You know, he hasn't been able to take him to the next level. And the one thing with the Magic, I always talk about drafting best player available, but they're the only team that like is the exception. They did it with Bamba, but he can't really play in front of Vucevic, who they ended up signing. And then they just drafted Chuma Okeke, who I had at 13 overall on my board. I think they took him 16. But when is he going to get the opportunity to play behind Isaac and Vucevic and Gordon? And he's not going to get the minutes he needs to develop. And so, yeah, they got to start to actually put a roster together. And like you said, figure out who they have. The Suns. Let's go to the Suns, because I think Mikal Bridges was a guy I was high on. And it's really good to see that Bridges is coming to life in the bubble. Always known for his defense. And suddenly I just saw him pour 26 points on the Raptors, I should say. I think he scored 16 against Boston. The jumper's looking good. He looks a little more confident offensively. I think he's a big part of what's going to help Phoenix get to that next level. What do you think of Bridges? What do you think about this Suns team in general?
Man, like, I was kind of excited to see the game that he had the other day with 26 points. It looked like his offensive game is coming along, because the defense, again, was never a question, right? Like, we always kind of thought he's going to be a good, solid defender. What can he do offensively to help sort of the Suns along? And he's developing his stuff. He's shooting it pretty well. He's all around, I just like what he's doing. I think the Suns need that. They need to start having more competent players. Like, this feels like the first year in like five where it felt like they've put together competent players around Devin Booker. And now we're beginning to see, like, yo, Devin Booker is not just a high volume shooter or big points guy on a bad team. Like, he can play. And this is what happens when you put him around guys with like Ricky Rubio, with a high basketball IQ, who can handle the ball and allow Booker to play off balls from time to time. You know, seeing some improvements from DeAndre Ayton, and you know, he knocked down a three the other day. I'm hoping that's something he can kind of continue. It's amazing how we talk about big guys now having to add the three. I know it's old news, but at the same time, it's still every now and then I'm like, if they don't add a three-point shot, it's a problem. But I think it's a interesting scenario that the Suns are building. You know, the hardest thing for the Suns at the end of the day is they're just a victim of their location. You know, in the Western Conference, it's brutal. Yeah. You know, and I've talked about it before on other podcasts. Like, you know, just forget about this season. Let's just talk about going forward the next couple of years. It's going to be a 11-12 team race for eight spots. You know, it's that's how deep the West is right now. And, you know, injuries and things will play a role through these things, and some teams will go up and down and whatnot. But it's just tough in that situation. And I think what I like about the Suns most of all is that, you know, Monty Williams has come in and is beginning to set the culture, which I always think is the most important thing for first year coaches. He's beginning to lay it down here, and the guys are beginning to respond to it. And I think it's important for this team, because you got to think the clock's ticking on Devin Booker's patience.
Yeah. And so I think a big part of how far Phoenix goes is DeAndre Ayton, who seems to get lost in the conversation because of Trae Young and Doncic from that draft class. And of course, you know, it was the wrong pick technically because Phoenix passed on Luka.
Right.
But like Ayton's pretty good. And the funny thing is, going back to high school, and Ayton was always like the top prospect in the recruiting ranking, so it's not like he came out of nowhere at Arizona. And there's been a ton of film on him dating back to when he was 16 years old. But one of the knocks, honestly, I had him at high school is that he takes too many threes. He tries to show off that he's got a jump shot when he's so powerful around the basket, he didn't use that enough. And then 2 years in the NBA, we didn't really see him take any threes.
Right.
He definitely has the range, and he definitely has the confidence to take it. So I don't know if he was just coached to play to his strengths, you know, within 15 feet. But if Ayton does start to develop this three ball, I mean, how high is his ceiling in today's NBA?
I mean, it's great, you know. I mean, I think he still has areas he's got to improve defensively, and he's a young big, and that takes forever
big guys. Let me also cut you off, because defense has been – he's kind of been labeled as, okay, he's not a great rim protector, and that really devalues him as a guy who's only going to play the five. What has been his defensive, you know, what has he done defensively from year one to year two?
I think part of it is understanding the scheme, right? And I think that's the big game there. And I think it's not easy for big guys to fully get that. And the we see this with a lot of big guys, like a guy like Hassan Whiteside, who think, I'm big, I should go block shots,
right?
You know, and not understanding that when I go to chase a block, I'm leaving a hole, you know, and I need to make sure my teammates are covering for me. And if you're not a good rotating team, it's a problem. And sometimes you're chasing blocks that it's like, you're never going to get that block, man. Like, what are you doing? And I think that's something young big guys all have to kind of learn. And also, it's a tough adjustment, right? Like in college, you're like, I could get this block. In the NBA, it's like, oh no, that's LeBron. I'm not blocking this shot. Like, you know, I'm better off boxing out. And I think that's the thing. And I think he's getting there. He's shown improvement in that area, understanding the rotations and understanding the schemes. And I think that's something that has to continue to happen, because it's the defensive IQ that's really going to come down to it. Is, can he pick this stuff up? Can he learn it? And can he understand the when he's got to come over and when he needs to hang back or things like that? It's a small thing, but it's, man, big guys take forever to develop in terms of, you know, finding that defensive presence, you know, and understanding it full well. I mean, some guys might come in the league and have it, but not a lot do. But if he's able to do that, and then to go back to what we were talking about with his three and add a 3-point shot, I mean, that's a hell of a player right there. I mean, he's gonna have a long value in the league just because he's able to spread the floor and defend. And then he has a post game, which I know we're talking about the post game has gone away. It's still a valuable tool for NBA teams. I mean, look what Philly's done with Joel Embiid in the post. Look what the Milwaukee Bucks are able to do. When you switch on to Brooke Lopez in a pick and roll, he's going right to the paint. He's taking the small in the paint, and he's going to take it right up. And I think that's a nice added value. Now, is it going to be the focal point of most offenses? Probably not. But it's a good tool to have. And I think that's something that, you know, Ayton already has kind of the post game. But he's got to add the other things to really kind of become that complete player.
Yeah. Now, going back to your point on, like, the post game is dead or whatever, like, it's only dead if you don't have a really good post player.
Right. Playing it simple. I mean, we always talk about it that way. I'm like, man, look, LeBron's making a killing this year in the post. Like, it's right. It's not dead in the sense of, I don't think it ever died. It's just never, its value dropped a bit.
Right,
which is fine.
And one of the arguments I have with NBA scouts today, so I have Onyeka Okongwu, USC center, is number three on my board. And a lot of scouts will push back and say, you know, what's his upside in today's NBA as a post player? I'm like, well, what happens if he's a really damn good post player? You know, like, Embiid is so good in the post, let him play in the post. So, yeah, that's kind of my point with that. And Ayton has that. And if he's able to stretch the floor and then, like you said, improve defensive IQ, which is so much more important than defensive tools, I think. I mean, we always talk about his wingspan and his strength, but if he doesn't know how to use them, then what's the point? And so it'll be interesting to see how much his defensive IQ improves. Another big storyline, I probably should have got to earlier in the podcast, is Bol Bol. So yeah. Bol Bol is, you know, he's generating, like, all the attention from these three games. And of course, he slipped to 44 in the draft. I'm telling you, it was weird. I remember sending out text messages to scouts during that draft being like, how come no one's taking Bol Bol yet? You know, what's going on with Bol Bol? And nobody answered me till after. And pretty much every answer on why they didn't take Bol Bol, I think every answer was either had to do with, you know, the injury risk or not strong enough, or the fact that he just doesn't have this drive. And I don't think he interviewed very well. And if you listen to him, he's very soft-spoken. He doesn't, like, come off as, like, a killer. You know, he doesn't talk about, like, he lives and breathes basketball. And I think that turns some people off. And honestly, it just speaks to more. I think there's so much overthinking sometimes when it comes to the draft. I had him top 10 all year until questions popped up about his medicals, and I moved him down a little bit, but certainly not to 44. He's so skilled. Do you think he can continue executing these type of skills that we've seen so far in the bubble, despite the fact that he's like 210 pounds?
Yeah, I think he can. First off, you know, MVP Bol Bol. Let's just scrimmage MVP Bol Bol. Everybody was going nuts with those games. You know, I think he's got to find himself, you know, in the league. Look, he's got the skills, man. He's 7'2", can shoot it pretty well. I mean, you know, it's interesting, you know, him dropping. Obviously, the injury risk is always going to scare teams. And then you add it with questions of his motor, and that's how you drop to 44. Like, that's just kind of the way it works, unfortunately, in the league. But, you know, it was a steal for the Nuggets. I think he's got enough of a little bit of everything that makes it worth the, hey, let's spend the time in development. He's still young as hell. You know, he's what, 20 years old? Like, you know, he's got time to figure this thing out, I think. And, you know, hopefully he'll be able to put on some weight. Look, with his frame, he's never going to be like jacked, you know, or swole or anything like that. But I think he has that ability to just add some weight to his frame and things like that. He's not going to be, I don't think he's going to be a banger in the post, but again, the game's drifted away a little bit from that I think, you know, there's an area for him. Do I think he's a star? Do I think he's this? No, I mean, to me, he's probably like your big man off the bench, but I don't know if he's, but I don't think it's, I think it's too soon right now to jump on and saying like, we expect things from him. I think he's a 3 or 4 year project. And then at that point, everybody's going to be going like, why the hell did he drop to 44?
Yeah. Well, going back to why did he drop? And I kind of say this every year, I think interest and disinterest is contagious. Like when teams are hearing that this guy's rising up boards, you know, that interest is contagious. And the same thing goes for disinterest. Like, why is nobody taking it? Maybe there's something that I don't know that they know. So I'm going to stay off too. And so I think that played a role in it also. It was just a weird scenario. He clearly is not like he's clearly a first round talent. And it really just comes down to, can he stay healthy? I think, and he'll be able to add enough value where he's a rotation player, stretching the floor, a guy who can grab and go. And you know, I saw him hit a pull up in transition from downtown the other day. Like, I don't know how many times we'll see that, but he's capable of it. And, you know, he moves decently well. He can get pretty high above the rim with that 7'8" wingspan. So in space, he's got the chance to be a nice pick and roll finisher. I think he's got enough to his game where he's clearly going to play a role for the Denver Nuggets down the road. Who else do we not touch on? What other teams? The Pelicans. I mean, obviously, you know, Zion hasn't played yet, and he's decent. But they also have these other young guys who, I mean, I saw Frank Jackson come to life the other day. Jackson Hayes, I had number 5 on my board coming out of the draft, so I'm high on him. I think Alexander Walker played well, at least for one of the games. You know, obviously, we know about the big names on New Orleans, but what have you seen from some of these younger guys who may have not really blown up during the regular season?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on Jackson Hayes. Like, I was excited when they drafted him. I thought, like, wow, this is kind of another bouncy guy to pair with this team. Like, I thought this is going to be a good piece for them going forward. And he's has flashes here and there, you know, with the Nikhil Alexander Walker. And this is just going to be a stupid side note, but these guys with three names now, it's beginning to kill me. Okay. Not helping us in the podcast game, folks. but you know, he's a guy, like, they have a lot of pieces that they can just develop. Like, what I love about the Pelicans in that sense is they have veterans that can kind of teach these guys the way and show them the way. And when these guys are ready, you know, and this is probably not going to be polite, but you know, Griff can put the veterans out to the pastures. Like, you know, it's right. It's one of those things, you know, like, these they they have the perfect mix of veteran talent with young kids that they can develop and work on. I mean, all of these guys have promise in the league. Like, you can see where all these guys would fit on this roster in 3 or 4 years, right? It's like, you know, J.J. Redick might be gone by that point. Jrue Holiday might be gone at that point. Cool. They have, you know, Frank Jackson and Lonzo Ball. You have Nickeil Alexander-Walker rolling in. You have Josh Hart coming in off the bench. You have Jackson Hayes, you know, replacing Favors whenever, you know, I think Favors is a free agent this year. So, you know, he could kind of step into that role. And of course, you have Zion. I think they kind of have set themselves perfectly to be, we're going to compete now, and we're going to develop our young guys so that we can have a long, sustained run. And then they have the $50 million picks that they got from the Lakers. So I think they're kind of set in a pretty good situation.
Yeah, I think obviously getting Zion in that draft was huge, but Griffin did a great job of adding other assets. They also have Didi Luzada, who's playing in Australia, who'll come over as a rookie. Next year, he was the 35th pick. So, I mean, I'm super high on this Pelicans team. You know, I don't know what they're going to do right away in the bubble, but long term, I mean, I got a feeling that this is going to be a team that can kind of contend with some of the better teams in the West, right, over the next couple of years.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's going to take a little bit of time, but, like, I mean, 3 or 4 years from now, Zion's going to be a better player. I think, you know, I think Lonzo's kind of hitting his ceiling. Like, this is who he is, and if this is who he is, it's a damn good basketball player, folks.
I totally agree.
You know, and I think Brandon Ingram's just figuring out, you know, that, like, yo, I can be a great one-on-one scorer in this league. And I think, you know, the stuff that doesn't get shown up that much about him is he's got a little bit of playmaking to him too, which I like. So I think that they just got a lot of promise on this team. And, you know, if things work out right, and I think Zion has areas he's got to improve. We never really talk about the fact that he's not a great defender. You know, and he's got to improve in that area, you know, in terms of his rotations and kind of the way I talked about DeAndre Ayton. Like, he's got to start figuring out and understanding schemes better. But, you know, as he gets older and as he develops, you know, this team is going to be they're going to be right there in the mix for the next 8 years, I'd imagine, if everything works right.
Who are you taking over the next 10 years, Zion or Luka?
Man, that's a tough one. But I think I'm going to take Luka. Mm-hmm. Because I think he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot more.
Yep.
Exactly. You know, and it's, you know, as good as Zion is, and Zion can dribble and Zion can create, he's still always going to be dependent on his guards setting him up a little bit. Yep. You know, even if it's just as simple as dribbling it down and throwing it into him in the post. Believe me, I've watched a lot of Laker games when LeBron sits on the bench and that they're not able to get the ball to Anthony Davis in the post. Like, it's a lot harder than it looks. So I think for Luka, he just has the ball in his hands. He's going to be the one bringing the ball up the court. He can orchestrate the entire offense. So for me, I am taking Luka, but whoever ends up with Zion, it's not like they've lost anything.
Right. Yeah, I do think Zion is a potential MVP candidate, but for the same exact reason, I'm taking Luka. Fourth quarter, tight game. I'd rather the ball in Luka's hands because of his ability to create a good shot. Let's go to the Celtics, and then we'll close it out. Celtics, of course, they're going to be looking to compete for the title, but I'm more focused and more interested in some of these younger guys. They got a bunch of them. I mean, because they always have. They have three more picks in this upcoming first round. You look at all these prospects: Romeo Langford, Grant Williams, Robert Williams, Carson Edwards, Tremont Waters. You got a feeling one of these guys is going to surprise and become a key part of this rotation. Any of these guys jump out to you so far in the bubble?
I think Grant Williams' IQ is off the charts.
Yep.
Right. And he was, listen, I get weary of the summer league darling, right? Like, you know, whenever you go to summer league, there's always, you know, everybody, all the draft Knicks, no offense. they always start going like, man, you know, they were all over on Grant Williams. Like, he's going to be amazing. Everybody loved him. And it's like, I'm like, okay, cool. Let's see how it works in the season. And sometimes you see it, and sometimes it's like, yo, this guy is not very good. But Grant Williams is one of those guys where you're like, nope, he's very good. He's got a great IQ. He's solid all around. He's never going to just wow you. You know what I mean? Like, he's just going to kind of do all the small things that helps you win. And I think that's the stuff that matters. And with his smarts in his game and understanding the game at the level that he does, like, I think it's just such a valuable asset for the Celtics. And with pairing that with Brad Stevens' offense and understanding the cuts and where you need to screen and when to slip and things like that, he's going to be a big player for them.
Yeah, I had Grant Williams ranked above Romeo Langford, mostly almost exclusively because of basketball IQ. And his defensive anticipation is just, like, outrageous. I mean, he just knows exactly what his guy is going to do, despite the fact, you know, and he's able to act on it despite, you know, his strange frame, you know, that doesn't really jump out with athleticism or quickness.
Yeah, let me ask you this question. I'm going to turn it around on you here. How much are you looking at talent over IQ? Like, where are you on that in terms of basketball IQ? Smart's on off the court's a whole different story.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, how do you frame it when you're looking at those two things?
Yeah, I mean, it's not black and white, but sometimes guys are just so smart that I'm willing to bet on them figuring things out. And I kind of just simplify it. Like, Tyrese Haliburton is a kid from Iowa State, who can't beat anybody off the dribble. No real explosiveness to his game, but his basketball IQ is so smart that if he gets put in a system, in the right system, just like Lonzo Ball, put the right guys around him, and he's going to be such a valuable player in the NBA. You know, it's really tough to say. And then so this is a good segue to, like, Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards is, I think, the most talented kid in this draft in terms of physical talent. 6'5", 225, explosive athlete, highly skilled. I mean, an advanced shot creator, deep NBA range, but he's number four on my board because I don't think that he can apply all that talent to winning basketball. I just don't think he gets it. And so, you know, I'll rank him in terms of talent, but then low basketball IQ will bring him down a little bit. You know, it's same thing with, like, Wiggins, right? Like, Wiggins has all that number one overall talent. Nobody ever questioned that, but can he apply it? And can he convert it into winning plays consistently? I don't think he could. And that's kind of why his value is not right now number one overall value.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of the way I look at it. You know, there are times where it's like, nope, I need to just grab the talented guy and hopefully we can figure it out. And there are other times where it's, we need guys that are just smart basketball IQ guys. Like, if you're Phoenix, you need a smart basketball IQ guy right now, 'cause you have a lot of talent.
Yep.
You need competent players. Other teams, it's are you talent deficient or IQ deficient, and they have to figure it out from there.
Yep, it's a big equation, and you know, sometimes I think guys put too much stock into it, and, like, these interviews, and, you know, some of these scouts are like, what have you guys been doing lately? And they're like, oh, I'm calling this player's uncle, his best friend, his former ball boy, the guy who serves him sandwiches at the deli, and, you know, they're, like, taking all this. Sometimes it's not, you know, that complicated. And sometimes they overthink it, like with Bol Bol. But yeah, I do think basketball IQ does play a big role in terms of how they can apply the talent that they actually have.
I think we're gonna see a lot of overthinking this draft, just because the guys have had so much extra time to prepare.
Yeah.
I think we're gonna see a lot of guys they were excited about in June talk themselves out of it come October.
Well, so that's true. But then on the flip side, they're not going to have workouts. And sometimes guys get too excited about, they'll be like, oh, this kid had 17 threes in a row. You know, I guess he's
a better
shooter than what we showed. Meanwhile, every backup center in the league can, you know, make open threes in an empty gym. And so it's interesting. I see both sides to it, whether or not they're going to draft better this year with more time, or they're going to draft worse with more time. Anything else in the bubble that struck you that you want to bring up?
I just think overall the gameplay has been better than I thought it would be. You know, I thought, man, they haven't played in 4 months. It's going to be kind of brutal. It's trying to fill it out. All together, it's been pretty solid across the board. I felt like, you know, the shooting was pretty good. I don't know the numbers. It's been hard to try to find the stats all that well, and I've also been just relatively lazy about it, if I'm being honest with you. But it just feels like the shooting has been, you know, is better than I thought it would be. And I think, you know, we're in pretty good shape. I think a lot of the guys look in great shape, excellent conditioning wise, which makes me wonder how much they were actually quarantining when they should be, but that's a whole other story. But I think, you know, I'm excited. I think, you know, at times early on, I was like, man, these first few games are going to be really rough. And now I'm at the point, like, there might be some timing issues and things like that, but conditioning-wise and just the pure basketball stuff, I think we're in pretty good shape there, and I think the NBA is doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, totally agreed. Kicks off Thursday night, NBA. We got the lottery on August 20th, and then like 2 months after is the draft. So that's what we got to look forward to. Mo DeKeel, thanks for hopping in and dropping some knowledge, buddy. I really appreciate it.